Proverbs chapter 5. You find all kinds of different women. Find all kinds of different women in the Proverbs. You read throughout Proverbs and you always hear about the Proverbs 31 woman. You guys find it? Proverbs chapter 5? Okay. All right. The Proverbs 31 woman, that thing that the women want to be, and those of you who've never read Proverbs chapter 31, you will find that's a very wonderful woman. Well, there's another kind of woman we're going to deal with here. It's called the Proverbs 5 woman. you don't want to be, ladies, you don't want to be a Proverbs 5 woman, but now understand something that... You'll find so many warnings here in the scriptures regarding what type of women to stay away from, and seldom do you see what type of men to stay away from. Well, the reason is that the scriptures were given to men. Men were the ones to hold the scriptures that God gave, and they were the ones to they were entrusted with the scriptures. And women were merely held accountable, but it was the men's job to teach the women the way things went. So you'll find that even in Leviticus, the long chapter, I believe it's 18, don't quote me on that, you know, of all the sexual sins and such, it always talks about what a man should not do. But it doesn't say anything about what a woman should not do. Well, with all this in mind, this does not absolve women from sinful behavior. We know now, as women can read, women are also, as Paul would tell us, women are on equal footing with men as far as God's eyes are concerned. God sees us all the same. There's no slave, no free, no man, no woman, no Jew, no Greek. We're all the same, all right? So when we look at these scriptures and we see this type of woman to stay away from, I think it would be wise for the women to understand that there are definitely a type of man to stay away from. And you can go both ways with this, okay? Remember that. This is interchangeable, ladies. So while we're going to read about the Proverbs 5 woman, a man can also behave in this way, and a man can also ruin women's lives. And I know I've talked with many women who've had their lives ruined by men, and I've talked with many men who've had their lives ruined by women. But also, as we read this, you know, I would hope that we don't have to go here with this, and that I'd have to tell you, ladies, don't be like this. This is pretty gross when you see the things that go on here. So, Proverbs chapter 5, verse 1. My son, pay attention to my wisdom. Lend your ear to my understanding, that you may preserve discretion and your lips may keep knowledge. Now, this is just a little introduction that we've been hearing over and over again over the first four chapters. He's saying, would you listen to me? This is important. And it's, you know, like Jesus is saying, verily, verily, I say to you. He says, listen to this one. This is very important. But it's interesting when you look out across the world, look out across Fort Bragg, you can even look out across the church and see, as we read through this, that while the Bible begs us to listen, that we don't really listen. We don't mind going to church and opening up the Word, but we don't want to really listen, especially to something like this. And I don't know why that is, but that is our nature. Our nature is to not listen to something that we're afraid might be true. And if you've ever been on an airplane, you know what I'm talking about. When the airplane is taxiing down the runway and the attendant is there telling you how to use the mask in case of an emergency. When they are telling you where the exit doors are. Next time you're on a plane, have some fun. Look around at everybody. they are frantically reading their papers. Nobody watches. When she says the exit doors are over here in case of an emergency and the flotation device, nobody is looking for that exit door. Okay, thanks. That's the exit door. And they, you know, showing you how to do the thing, you know, and they show you the flotation device. Nobody's checking their flotation device. Nobody's got that little pamphlet out, looking at it, going over it. Nobody. Because they're afraid. They're a little superstitious even, you know. Hey, if I listen to this, then it might happen. And I don't know why we're all so stupid. But sometimes I look at the Bible in that same way. When people see the warnings in the scriptures, and they say, I don't need to hear this one. Well, I want to tell you the Bible is filled with warnings. Jesus alone warned us about false prophets, warned us about men, that is just plainly people, Pharisees, Sadducees, scribes, and their sins. He warned us against covetousness. And you parents, you know that if you are a good parent, you give warnings. The reason you give warnings is because you want your child to live. The reason you give warnings is you want your child to have the good life. And you know, because you're older and you've tripped in those potholes. And so you're telling your child where those holes are, because you don't want them to trip and you don't want them to die. And you, children, if you want to live the good life, then you heed the warnings. And you believe that there's truth in them. But it's so funny. Your parents warn you, don't play with the chainsaw. And so one day, you look left and you look right and you pick up the chainsaw. And you fire that baby up, and then you kind of feel guilty because you've done it, and you turn it off and you set it down, you walk away, and you think to yourself, nobody got hurt. I think that's the way people are with sin. It's like, oh, the Bible's full of warnings about sin and doing these things, but I did it, and I'm in the middle of it now. No one's getting hurt. Not yet. You know, just because you got away with it once doesn't mean that the warnings are bogus. And so, here's the thing. Verses 1 and 2 are just simply saying, listen, this is so important. Here we go. Verse 3, for the lips of an immoral woman, or a strange woman, as it says in the Old King James. I like that one better. Drip honey, and her mouth is smoother than oil. But in the end, she is bitter as wormwood, sharp as a two-edged sword. The immoral woman, the strange woman. Now, I'm so glad, though, that the New King James translates this for us as immoral woman. What does the NIV say? Who's got an NIV? Does it say? The adulteress. Okay, that's good. That's getting a little more descriptive. But here's the deal. You know, because just strange by itself, it, you know, looks like, you know, stay away from the strange woman. You know, that's the one that you know, she's just kind of strange. No, those are okay. Those people could be okay. What the point being made is that of the immoral one, the one who is looking for a physical relationship, that one that is looking for something from you. And notice that wonderful things will come from this person's mouth. Now, I want to say, ladies, that there is the immoral man, the strange man, to stay away from too. Understand that. But notice there in verse 3 that wonderful things are coming from her mouth. You know, talk about this promised land, a land flowing with milk and honey. You know, these are sweet things. It's wonderful things. And certainly this immoral woman, this strange adulterous woman, she does not speak as an evil person may speak. She's not going to come right out and say, "Hi, my name is so-and-so, and I'd like to ruin your life. And this is how we're going to go about it." Now, I want you to know the reason she doesn't do it is because she is, whether or not she knows it, she is being led by Satan. This is exactly how Satan operates. His words are sweet and they are smooth. You read in 2 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 14, that he disguises himself as that angel of light. Satan is a deceiver. And in order to deceive, he puts on a mask. That's what he does. He hides his true identity. There is no way that he's going to come out as that big, gross, ugly, stinky, obnoxious thing that just reeks of death. That only works on teenagers. It's not going to work on adults. As you know, teenagers, they like those records, you know, that have all the records. Sorry, CDs. They like the CDs that have Ozzy Osbourne on the front, you know, after he's bitten off the head of a dove or something, you know, and this really ugly stuff, you know, and anybody in their right mind, that's anybody, you know, younger than 12 and older than 20, they would look at that and they would say, "This is not only stupid, it's gross. It's disgusting, it's evil." But somewhere along the way, you know, Satan's got a good grip on many teenagers where they think that's cool. They think it's good. It's a hard one for me to understand. But for the rest of the population that doesn't think that's cool and good, Satan will use beauty. He will put on a mask because he doesn't want you to see his intentions, and that is to destroy you. Just the same way as when you or I go fishing, you know, you hide the hook by putting on their favorite thing. You put on their favorite food on the hook. You don't put on little Lego toys on the hook because they don't want. The fish will not eat Lego toys. The fish will eat squid, abalone guts, and all those really wonderful things that fish love. And we know what they love, and so they bite it, and we pull them in, and they die, and we eat them. That's what I do to a fish. I purpose in my heart to do it to a fish, but I begin this whole thing with the fish by deceiving the fish. And so it is with Satan. If he wants to catch a man, he doesn't use squid or abalone guts. He uses a woman. And if Satan wants to catch a woman, he'll use a man. That stuff's like power bait, you know. Now, Satan's been using women for a long time. Let's just get to the whole, well, the sexual side of using women, and that of Delilah. Remember Samson and Delilah. We meet Samson in chapter 13 of Judges, and it runs for a few chapters, but in Judges. But Delilah kind of ratted him out to the Philistines. But it was all a game with her. And she was so beautiful to Samson that it took his brains out completely. And so it is with the beautiful woman. Something happens to a man's brains. And then Samson fell for her little tricks, and she said, "Come on, please tell me why you're so strong." And he kept lying to her about it. And then she'd, because she was going to get paid by the Philistines, by the way. This was all about money. And once the Philistines could overpower him, then, you know, she'd get the cash and everybody be happy. And Delilah was just deceiving him left and right, and until finally Delilah used that line, "How can you say you love me if you won't do this for me?" You know, that's the oldest line in the book, isn't it? It's a few thousand years old. And yet women and men are falling for that line every day. Well, finally he says, well, my love, it's my hair. And so he fell asleep on her lap, and then she cut off his hair, and he lost his strength. He was captured, and he had his eyes gouged out by the Philistines. A woman did that. Bathsheba. She was an immoral woman. Let's not pretend she wasn't. Let's not pretend that she was innocent and David was the guilty one. Certainly David was guilty, but Bathsheba was bathing out in the open on her roof, which had just a perfect view of the palace, the cat where David would come out and just kind of look around at the city. And there she is. Oh, I hope he doesn't see me. You know, the whole thing was set up by Satan to destroy David. And though God restored David after the hideous sin of adultery and murder, David's life would never be as glorious as it was. Sin kills, Satan knows it, and the best bait is a member of the opposite sex. Notice there in verse 4 says, but in the end, she's bitter as wormwood, sharp as a two-edged sword. In the end, yes, which may come sooner or later, because there is an end to it. There is an end, like a roller coaster that ends with a brick wall. This bitter wormwood, what is wormwood? You see that term also in Revelation. But it's wormwood is poison. What does it say, gall? Yeah, gall. Poison. It's in the Hebrew, it's poison, hemlock. And it's, you know, simply the point being that the immoral woman, though she is so sweet with her words, and though she looks so good, she is full of poison, and it will bring you to your end. It's like eating bad food. Any of you have ever been food poisoned? Probably. I mean, I don't know. Half of us maybe have been food poisoned. I've been food poisoned. And it was an interesting experience. See, you don't know that you're food poisoned until it's too late. Right? Because, you know, even after a couple bites, you go, maybe I shouldn't have had that. And then, you know, give it an hour or so, and you're certain you shouldn't have had that. But, you know, it's amazing. Now, if someone were to tell you with food, and I've seen people behave this way. People are funny. You know, it might be their favorite thing there in somebody's refrigerator. Says, oh, man, who's going to eat this? No, wait a minute, man. It's got some green fur on this side, and I was just going to throw it out. And they say, oh, man, I love that, though. Let me just cut a piece of that off. You know, you can save the green furry part. Now, I think this part's pretty good. What do you think? You know, I remember one time I was a kid. I wanted so desperately to have whipped cream on this piece of pie. You know, I was like 7 years old. And there in the refrigerator that was full of stuff, there was this old forgotten little can of whipped cream. And it was green all around the side like that. I said, Dad, there it is right there. He goes, no, take that away, throw that away. That's horrible. You know what? If my dad was not looking, I would have had that. I would have taken it. I wouldn't have taken his warning at all. I would have just done it. But you and I, when we see the green on it, we usually stay away. Usually. But sometimes you don't see the green on it. Sometimes you don't see the poison around it. You don't. I was in Chile back when I was in the Navy, and they gave us these banquets all the time, and they brought us this food. The food was great. And then they brought this peaches and cream. It was so good. The cream was awesome, and the peaches were, and I did, oh man. And we are looking at each other, can you believe how good this tastes? Oh, and we took another bite, and just, and, oh man. My stomach started feeling funny even then, just right then. Two bites in my stomach going, and you know, I had been in South America now for about 3 months already, so I had figured that, you know, my stomach does that every now and then down here anyway. I'm not going to worry about it. And I had a couple more bites like an idiot. 3 days, I didn't eat a thing. 3 days. Funny, the whole band, we were in the Navy band, the whole band was sick. We were all sick from the cream that was on those peaches. But but here's the sick part. As soon as I felt something was wrong, I took two more bites until it just about killed me. I have seen relationships work that way. I've had many a woman come to me or my wife and say, well, he's done this and he's like that, but he's a good guy. Take a few more bites. And soon, you're dead. And the other way around too. Women, men, women, same thing. Even though you receive the warnings, which by the way, I didn't have those warnings that we give out when we send people to Peru now, which says, don't eat any dairy products. It's just one of those things. If you want to not get sick, don't eat dairy. It's very simple. We didn't have those warnings. But if you eat dairy products, just remember you were warned. And so it is. If you want to be dating the wrong people, just remember you were warned. Turns into poison, starts out good, turns into poison. In verse 5, her feet go down to death. Her steps lay hold of hell. Lest you ponder her path of life, her ways are unstable. You do not know them. By the way, this thing about lest you ponder her path of life, the other translations, a couple of them suggest that it says that she doesn't ponder her path of life. But it works both ways. In other words, you know, we should stop and think about what kind of path is that person on? What path have they been traveling on before they got to me? What was that person's path? What did they do? Now, that in case of a Christian, you know, any time before Christ, whatever that path was, if that is a real Christian, that path doesn't matter before that day. But what has the path been up to this point? Consider the path. That's how you can find out. You know, if this is, you know, if you are boyfriend number 25 in the last 2 years, you know, and every one of them have been left to live in the funny farm, then, you know, that's just a clue to you, you know, to stop and think for a second. Now, I do want to mention the fact of, you know, just as the NIV would call it, the adulteress, the adulterer, what is it, adulteress? Real simple. Men who are married, any woman that would give you goo-goo eyes is sent from Satan. It's pretty simple. You don't even have to stop and wonder. You don't have to stop and pray about it. You just know. As same with women. Women, you married ladies, any man that gives you the eyes, he is sent from the pit of hell. And so, so either she doesn't, okay, so the thing is, if you want to find out more about this person, it's good to ponder her path of life. And then also the other translations that say that she doesn't ponder her path. Well, certainly she doesn't. Anybody who destroys. Says she's unstable. Her ways are unstable. She has no anchor. She's been everywhere. And here's the clincher and the thing we don't like. Says you don't know them. You don't know her ways. You can't know them. Now, pride stops us from admitting, though, that we don't know something. We always say, or I've always heard, and I've always spoken with those whom I've seen getting into a dangerous situation with the opposite sex, they always say it. I know what I'm doing. I know what I'm getting into. Oh, sure, she's destroyed others, but not me. I mean, you know what? When she looks at me, it's like something's different there. Yeah. Same way for the women. They say, I know what I'm getting into. He won't do that to me. You know, you ought to talk. You know, those guys that have been married before, ladies, you know, those guys that have been married before and they're courting you. Why don't you give his ex a call and see what a good husband he was? No, but pride stops us from saying, no, I'm not sure about this person. Pride stops us from doing that. Pride stops us from it. Because the one thing is that we don't want to say we're fooled. And back to the fishing thing. There I am fishing. I've pulled up one fish. And so I throw the hook out again. And another fish starts to come up to the hook. After seeing that first fish go up. In a panic, you know. And as he's looking at it, he's about ready to take a bite when his friend says, no, Dave, don't do it. You saw Bob go up. There's the hook. You can see the hook. Come here on this side. Come around this side. That's a hook right there. And he says, oh, even though he saw the hook, full of pride, he says, that's not a hook. And if it is, I can bite around it. Yeah, but genius fisherman Kevin is up on the shore just feeling a little nibble. Wham! And it's gone and it's done and he's hooked going. And even all the way up, even so, all the way up to his death, he's yelling back to his friend, I knew there was a hook. You know, he's still full of pride. That's what people do. People say, it's not there, there's no hook. Well, I can bite around it if there is. No, you can't. You don't know it. And once you see any form of a hook whatsoever, it's time to go eat somewhere else. Verse 7, therefore hear me now, my children, and do not depart from the words of my mouth. Remove your way far from her, and do not go near the door of her house. This is great, because now we're given some practical instruction as what to do. Maybe you've come to know that this is not a good relationship. Well, now what you do is you remove your way far from her and just go away. Just depart. It's pretty simple. But notice it says don't come near the door. Don't go near the door of her house. That is key. We think, even though we know, okay, that's a sinful relationship. Okay, granted, it was not smart of me to get involved in that. But you start working your life around so that you'll accidentally bump into that person. Start working it around. I mean, don't go near the door. I love that because what do? You're just driving down her street. You know, she lives up on Sherwood Road or something, and you got to go from here to Safeway, so you take the shortcut around Sherwood all the way up. And you're driving by, and you look at the house, drive right by it, and she wasn't out there, so you do a U-turn, try again, drive by, and you're saying, well, I'm not seeing her, I'm not doing that, I'm just looking, I'm just driving by the house, I was driving this way anyway, right? Well, no, you know what? If her house is on the way to Safeway, then take the alternate route. Just don't even go near. Don't tempt yourself with going near this at all. I heard Brian Broderson tell a story once. He suffered from some ailment that I'm still not sure what it was, but he would get like deathly ill, and he did come close to death with this problem that he had, and He had to stay completely away from sugar. I don't think it was a diabetes thing, though. But anyways, he had to stay completely away from sugar, and it could possibly just kill him. I mean, put him in the hospital. Couldn't eat sugar. And so he went with his family to Marie Callender's, and they had a regular meal, and the waitress says, "Would you like some dessert?" And his wife, bless her heart, said, "No." Because she didn't want to stumble Brian. She didn't want, and so she says, "Oh, no, 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 thank you." And he said, "No, go ahead. Go ahead. I'm fine. I'm cool. You go ahead. I don't want you to get cheated out of your desserts. Go ahead. You can have it, you know." And she got like a cherry pie or something. And he stared at that pie. And he's just, you know, he said it was just killing him. And he says, "You know what? Let me just have one bite." And she said, "No, you'll get sick." And true story, he really did this. And he told this in public, so I don't think he minds that I'm repeating what he did. He said, I just want to taste it. I'll get my napkin, I'll just chew it and spit it out." Well, you know the rest of the story. All right, and he did. He got just sick, sicker than anything, because he, by the time it made it to the mouth, it was going to go down, and that was all there was to it. And if you want to drive by the door, then we know what you really want. Don't just depart a few feet from her. You remove your way far from her. It's foolish to just say, "Well, you sit here and I'll sit there." But rather, you know, if you have to leave town, dead serious, if you have to leave town. See, as I didn't even brush on verse 5, you go back to verse 5 for a second, where does she lead you to? To death and hell. Hell is in the Hebrew there is Sheol, which is the grave. Death and the grave. She leads to death. Nowhere else. She leads to death. And so it's pretty serious. And to depart from her would be the smartest thing to do. Lest you give your honor to others, verse 9, and your years to the cruel one. Lest aliens be filled with your wealth and your labors go to the house of a foreigner. All of that is in that poetic fashion of the Hebrew poetry. You know, it's said one way and then said, you know, over and over again in a different way. You know, unless really what it's just saying simply is that everything you are and everything you own is going to be found in the hands of people you don't want it. You don't want to have it. In the hands of scoundrels. I mean, how embarrassing. You know, I mean, you know, think about in terms of divorces and such here in the United States, and that you know, you may have just quickly gotten married to somebody and then you found out that he's got two other wives in some other country. And so you leave, but you've lost your honor. You've lost so much. And you gave him your car because you were so madly in love with him that you did anything he said. "I'd like to have your car, darling. okay, anything for you, my love. And you gave him the car, and you've lost everything. And now you walk away, and you're just another victim of his. And then people would say, oh, well, I heard this guy did this and this and this and this to some ladies. And you're one of the ladies. How embarrassing. Yeah, because even you know what they say, though, too. They'll go on and on. They say, I never, because I can't believe there would be a lady so foolish as to fall for his little tricks. Isn't that amazing? And there you are going, well, I know. You know, and there you are lying and being embarrassed about the whole thing. But it's all been given over to the wrong people, and you know it now, and that's all there is to it. And you mourn at last when your flesh and your body are consumed. There it is in the end again, at last, ruined, ripped off, all at the hands of a person. Just to say a person, you know, remember, this is about the immoral woman. Men are well, men can be, well, we can all be dumb. But think about it, men, all at the hands of a girl. Had your whole life ruined by a girl. It is amazing what we will do to ourselves. Verse 12, and say, how I've hated instruction and my heart despised correction. I've not obeyed the voice of my teachers, nor inclined my ear to those who instructed me. I was on the verge of total ruin in the midst of the assembly and congregation. In the midst of the assembly and congregation, is the whole church knew it? Perhaps. The whole church knew it before you did. And if they don't know it before you know it, they're going to know it. Luke chapter 12, verses 2 and 3. Jesus says, there's nothing covered that will not be revealed, nor hidden that will not be known. Therefore, whatever you have spoken in the dark will be heard in the light, and what you have spoken in the ear in inner rooms will be proclaimed on the housetops. And I want you to know, gang, it is not our job to do the shouting from the housetops when somebody sins. That's God who does it. God will reveal it. He reveals it only because that may be the only thing that will cause us to snap out of it. And that would be that public shame of being found as a fool, the public shame of being found as a sinner. Yep. The verge of total ruin in the midst of the assembly and congregation. I do want to say, however, we are not the ones to do shouting of people's sins. But if you read in Matthew chapter 18 and the whole pattern of restoration that Jesus gives us, that if somebody is blowing it, that you bring them aside, you put your arm around them, and in love you share, saying, hey, you know, we got this problem here. And if they don't receive it, then you bring a couple more brothers with you, and you try it again so that they can see that there's a problem here. And if they don't receive, if he doesn't receive it then Jesus says, then bring it to the whole church and say, we got a problem here. And if he doesn't receive it then, you know, then, well, that guy's an unbeliever. And you got to set him out. If he's saying he is a believer while he's living in this sin. And so yeah, the Lord will use the church to expose the sin. But as individuals, no, we're not to expose sin. Love covers sin. As individuals, we are not to expose it at all. And that's why you go one-on-one with somebody, put your arm around him and talk to him. You don't call up the radio station and say, hey, so-and-so's in sin. Could we broadcast that? And so, anyway, and all of this shame, all of this death, all of this stuff you've lost, there it is. Because why? Because you didn't heed the warnings. Proverbs 12:1 says it. Whoever loves instruction loves knowledge, but he who hates correction is stupid. That's the Bible. The Bible says that. If you hate correction, you're stupid. How many times have we all been stupid? How important it is. But remember these warnings. Warnings are made out of love. They are made out of love. If God didn't love us, He wouldn't lead us or guide us or instruct us. He wouldn't do any of that. He would just let us flail around and destroy ourselves. And so, instead of chasing after the immoral woman, here we go, verse 15. Drink water from your own cistern, running water from your own well. Should your fountains be dispersed abroad, streams of water in the streets? Let them be only your own and not for strangers with you. Let your fountain be blessed and rejoice with the wife of your youth. As a loving deer and a graceful doe, let her breast satisfy you at all times and always be enraptured with her love. Or it says actually intoxicated with her love. For why should you, my son, be enraptured by an immoral woman and be embraced in the arms of a seductress? Drink water from your own cistern. You know, let's talk to the married people here for a second. God gave you a companion. God gave you that person to become one with. And if you have your own wife, men, what are you doing? Why are you looking all the places you look? Which, by the way, that's the first step, men. That's the first step. Even what we think of as that innocent look with the eyes. We go, oh my goodness, look at that. All right, well, you've already done step one. You know, you go around, let's go back to these cisterns and these wells. You know, you've got your own well in your own yard. You get your own water, and there you are looking at somebody else's well when you have plenty of water right there. God gave you that well. God gave you that wife. Should your fountains be dispersed abroad? I love that you know, you ever put the hose there in the street? You've washed your car and you get all those little channels out going out into the road. You can't drink from those channels. They're doing nobody any good. They don't do any good. You know, just as it is, you know, you put a sprinkler system in your yard, you don't put sprinkler heads all, you know, every foot apart. You get no water pressure. Nothing gets done. You know, God gave us one thing, one sprinkler head. And then it gets done the way God intended it to be. But instead, there we are, fountains be dispersed abroad, giving of yourself here, 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 and here, and pretty soon you have nothing. Be your own. Rejoice with the wife of your youth. Ah, that's the problem. She don't look as good as she did when we got married. You know. She now wait a minute. Let me do some splaining here before those rocks start flying from the ladies. Men, you don't look so good either. All right. You know, for whatever criticism you have for your old wife, you are an old husband, and you are as wrinkly as she is. And I can say this because I'm turning into all kinds of shapes that I never thought it would happen. And gravity is having its way with me in ways that I never thought would happen. And it's just, it's amazing. And my wife and I will even laugh with each other about it. And we look at each other and say, remember when we used to be beautiful? And it was, what happened? But you know, let me tell you something about my wife. And I'm not sitting here just to blow smoke. I'm not sitting here to look. I'm just going to tell you a fact of my marriage. She looks better to me now than she ever did. I love that woman. We all grow older And we don't look as good as we did when we were 20. All you 20-year-olds, you teenagers, you know. Don't worry, you're going to behold your future. So, but you know, what the Lord grows in us is what's going on inside. And that's what becomes more and more beautiful. And you know, as we grow and we mature in our relationship with the Lord and our relationship with each other, you know, I find myself rejoicing in the wife, with the wife of my youth. She's awesome. And we have fun. We love to be together, and it's just what a much more glorious life that is, to rejoice in the wife with a husband of your youth than to lament the wife of your youth. Lament that, you know, this has just turned into a roommate situation and I hardly even like you anymore. Which I've seen that happen in a lot of relationships. And it is so sad. But understand that verse 18 here is a command. It's a command from God. Rejoice with the wife of your youth. You know, and then, you know, we're gonna go ahead and get a little graphic here. Loving, dear, and graceful doe, let her breast satisfy you at all times, be enraptured with her love. If you want to get more graphic than that, we can read Song of Solomon. But we're not going to do that tonight. But you see, what happens is why men have adulterous relationships, why they do that is because they're looking for something, some kind of excitement or something out there, or they're not getting something at home. And, you know, there's a lot of reasons, regardless whatever these reasons might be, it is sinful. And we are commanded, men, to be satisfied with our wives' bodies. And that's that. Does not matter the shape or size or anything. We are to be satisfied. Now, the other way, ladies, you too, with the men. That's where your satisfaction is. And, you know, you can be absolutely enraptured and intoxicated with love for the body of your spouse. You really can, if you are seeing the beauty that God is putting inside of that person. And so we are instructed where we're to get that excitement. We are instructed that that is the only place to get it. God gave that to us. Now, you single people, I can hear you thinking. It's pretty loud in here. What about those who don't have a husband or wife? Well, you wait on the Lord. You wait for the Lord to provide a husband or a wife if that is what the Lord would do. I would encourage you to listen to all three studies out of chapter 7 of 1 Corinthians if you're single, because singleness is a gift. And the Lord can change that in the Lord's timing. But don't go thinking that the answer to all life's problems, don't go thinking that all of your security and your fulfillment is going to be found in a wife or a husband. Because certainly it's a different life than the single life, for sure. Responsibility, which, by the way, as I say, wait on the Lord. We talked about waiting on the Lord last Wednesday night, right? And when we talk about waiting on the Lord, part of waiting on the Lord is simply being obedient to Him. Is you're obedient to Him regardless of what you see or what you don't see. You're just waiting on Him. And I think this is a great example of waiting on the Lord for single people. Be obedient to Him. If, well, 2 Corinthians chapter 6 plainly says, do not be unequally yoked with unbelievers. Now, if we find Mr. or Mrs. Wonderful and find out that they're not a believer in the Lord Jesus Christ, well, we're not waiting on the Lord if we marry that person, if we're even dating that person. Wait on the Lord and do it His way. Or go ahead and do it your way. And then I'll see you in my office with the tears and I'll see you later. I will. It's going to go back to verse, 12. It's like, oh, how I hated instruction. I hated it. I didn't want it. I wanted what I wanted. And instruction just, oh boy, gets on my nerves, instruction does. And so, verse 21, for the ways of man are before the eyes of the Lord, and He ponders all his paths. His own iniquities entrap the wicked man, and he's caught in the cords of his sin. He shall die for lack of instruction, and in the greatness of his folly he shall go astray. Yeah, the eyes of the Lord, he says he ponders all his paths, or he weighs or observes all his paths. The Lord's watching everybody. And then with all that watching, he gives us the instructions here in his word. And so the only way that we can fall is through folly, and that is to be a fool. And God sees it all. He sees that destruction of so many. And notice that it says, because in verse 23, he shall die for lack of instruction. It's because of lack of instruction that people die. What? Wait a minute. There's plenty of instruction here. What do you mean lack of instruction? Well, my daughter Sarah left. She up and left in the middle of the study. Maybe she was offended, but I would like to bring her up now. They went to the beach a few days back, and you see, my daughter Sarah, she didn't get any of my Mexican blood in her at all. She's a little white girl all the way. And we learned as far back as when she was 3 years old that if she is out in the sun for a couple hours, that she gets a heat stroke, heat exhaustion, and or dehydration. And we were trying to figure it out one summer, because every time we go out to the beach or go out to somebody's pool or whatever, we'd come home and Sarah would just kind of mope around, and then we'd take her temperature later that, and she had a temperature. She would get sick every time. So now we know. We go, hey, we figured it out. We're pretty smart. And so she went to the beach a few days back, and she got sick. Why? Well, for lack of water. We give her water. We say, drink this, drink this, drink this. Well, but she got sick at the beach for lack of water. And it was interesting because she had a bottle with her that was this tall, literally, of water. It was with her. But she was too busy having fun to drink the water. Though she had it all around her, with her. All she had to do was tip it. But she got sick for lack of water. just as he shall die for lack of instruction. It's there, all around. Everybody who falls in these holes and suffers and dies, it's because of lack of instruction. It's because they would not take the instruction. Maybe they were having too much fun and forgot to listen to the instruction on the way. We must be careful where we have our fun. You got to be careful where you have your fun. You got to be careful where you have your fulfillment. And I will say that there is no lack of instruction here tonight. There is no lack of instruction, but still, many will die for lack of instruction. Understand that this Bible is not merely a book of comfort. It is a book of instruction. We are so prone to taking this Bible when we are hurting, when we need some comfort, and opening it up and reading Psalm 23. We are so prone to finding the comfort, and then whenever we find anything where it tells us very plainly what to do or what not to do, we're not real sure if that's what we want to look at, because we want comfort. And that's not a comforting verse. Let's find a comforting one. And so you flip through looking for comforting verses. But remember, this, while this does have comfort, it has instruction. And if we do not follow the instructions, we will be left empty and dead. Just as a cookbook, when you are hungry, you don't take out a cookbook, read a few recipes, and put it away and say, "Oh, I'm glad I did that." Everybody knows how foolish that would be. But no, you take that cookbook, and I swear, one day I'm going to be a comedian and I'm going to have a bunch of Corys in the audience and I am going to be rich. But we don't take a cookbook, read the recipes, close the book, and are satisfied. We have to do what it says, and then we will be fed. As the Bible, we read it, we do what it says, we take the warnings to heart, and then we will be satisfied. Then we will be filled with who He is. And then we can understand these things more and more and receive more and more blessing from Him. Please, and I would say this to us here and anybody would listen on CD or what, do not die for lack of instruction. How foolish that would be when the instruction is all over. It predicted it. Father, thank you for your word. Thank you for the warnings. We need warnings, Lord, because we're slow and we want to do things our way. Lord, we want to do things in a way that will satisfy us for this very moment. And Lord, I just pray that you would just speak to our hearts and convince us of your great love for us and your great wisdom. And Lord, that we would take the warnings from your word and that we would obey and that we would walk straight with you and that you would do miracles in our lives. Thank you so much, Lord. We love you. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen.